The Feel Better Station for Warrington Hospital.
This is Radio General.
Now, the final hooter.
Why aye, man.
Why aye, Adrian. Me canny man.
Why aye, canny bagger Tudor. Did you enjoy the Magic Weekend rugby weekend in Newcastle?
Well, it was played in some strange place. I don't know why. They played it at the...
I tell you what, it was magic. Oh, I can't do it anymore. I'm sorry, listeners. We were trying to be topical. By having jolly accents at the start of this fantastic Final Hooter podcast.
Didn't quite work out, though, did it?
No. It did well in rehearsal, it's got to be said, but when it came to the crunch, crumbled.
Don't go looking at me. It's not my fault. It's not my fault you can only speak in pure Widnesian.
We're just trying to be topical because the Magic Weekend was in Newcastle, weren't we?
We were.
And I was disappointed, by the way, because at the Summer Bash, yeah, Cornetto was being given away.
All right, what were they giving out?
Nothing. Where was the Nuki Brown?
Nothing.
Where were the Tudor Crisps? They don't even make Tudor Crisps. But anyway, where were they?
I don't know. You were there and I wasn't.
Do they make cakes in Newcastle, like Eccles Cakes?
No, they're made in Manchester, strangely enough, called Eccles Cakes.
No, I mean, do they make a cake in Newcastle?
Don't know. Maybe people could let us know. Maybe that'd be a good thing.
Nothing being given out anyway. Disappointed. But I was made up with the action. I thought it was a great weekend.
Yeah. To be honest, I think the first day was my favourite. Definitely. I thought there were three top-class games, all kicked off with Widnes doing a job over Salford. Followed that with a pulsating Hull derby. And then to just whet the appetite even further, you had a bash-a-thon, really, didn't you, between Wigan and Leeds?
Nothing like a bash-a-thon between Wigan and Leeds.
I know. Just think about how many of these journalists, though, criticised the Summer Bash the week before when it was Featherstone and Lee deciding to have a bit of a shindig.
Hypocrites, aren't they?
So, and yet everybody loves it when it's Super League. Anyway.
Everyone was saying day two wasn't as good as day one, but I thought it was a good weekend all round.
Yeah, I mean, you were there and I wasn't, so that's...
you were in Whitehaven.
I was, yes. I was gathering in a Whitehaven wonder while you were taking in Newcastle Magic. See what I did there?
Very clever,
that. Yeah. It's good to catch
on. I'm going to have to stop doing that. We promise you, between now and the end of this Final Hooter podcast on lovably.com. Normally, we're in the studio with our friends Radio General, but unfortunately, we're not there, so we're doing it via other means this evening. And as always, we're going to kick it all off with the good, the bad and ugly of Rugby League. Well, what's in the good on this Final Hooter? Well... summer finally started, isn't it? The sun was out during the Magic Weekend. It was rather nice as well at the home of Widnes and Warrington over the weekend, anyway.
Yeah, that was me, that. I'm scraping the barrel, really, I'm to say summer's finally started. Yes, we're in June. Yes, you expect it to be summer, but sometimes you just don't quite get it. But, yeah, the sun's come out, and I was even sat in that press box over at Widnes the other week with... shirt sleeves on. That's never happened.
Well, you know summer's arrived and you're sat in the north stand at the Halton Stadium and you don't even have to wear your duffel coat.
Yeah, normally you're sat in there and it's like you're facing a force 10 gale and it's 10 below. But no, fair play, long may it continue, and I really enjoy the hospitality given to us by the Widnes Club.
Marquee signings, that could be in all three, couldn't it? Good, bad and ugly.
Well, I put it in the good because I think that... our game has been raided, hasn't it, over recent years, and we've seen our best talent go from...
downside, here, down under.
Yeah, it's gone from here to the NRL, here to Rugby Union, and I just get the feeling with the marquee signing rules and all that's involved in that, and also being able to give a player, if they've come through your own setup, a bit more money, I think it helps, and it'll help to keep people within our sport.
Now, here's a thing. Have we been given an early taster of this marquee signing procedure with the fact that Warrington have handed Hull FC £140,000 for the services of Tom Lynham for the next 4 years?
Well, I mean, it's a bit of a strange one, really, isn't it? To pay £140,000 for a wingman, certainly a player that I think Hull signed him for nothing from York, if memory serves right. So I hope York's getting a bit of a kickback on this, to be fair. But I doubt it somehow. I think it's an interesting move. Is he worth £140,000? He's still a little bit unproven for me. Yes, he's a very good finisher in the Super League. Yes, he scored a hat-trick against Widnes the other week. But in Super League, who's not scored a hat-trick against Widnes over the last few years?
You've been funny. Normally in the good, bad and the ugly, we have two of each, but this time round we decided to have three goods. Welcome back to the world of British Rugby League in Brian Smith. I tell you what, be a good brotherly shootout when the Smith brothers go head-to-head with Wakefield and Warrington later in the season.
Well, there was that group, wasn't there, back in the 80s, the Smiths.
There you go.
There you go. But, no, in all seriousness, Brian was one of these first super Australian coaches that came over, wasn't he, back in the 1980s. Coached Hull, won them a Premiership trophy, although I think Noel Cleal got it in the end. But he set the wheels in motion for it. Then he disappeared off down under, made St George a force. Unfortunately, they got beat in two grand finals back to back. Then he came over here, didn't he? Playing his trade with the Bradford Bulls, kick-started the Bulls and got them up to really challenge in the St Helens and Wigan dynasty, as it was at the time. And, well, then he disappeared off back down under and led another two clubs to within inches of picking up the silverware. He's one of these coaches that, unfortunately, hasn't won the big prize in Australia.
How can he be a super coach, then?
Well, he's just been around for so long, hasn't he? You know, I mean, you're talking about a guy who's been coaching top-class rugby league for 30 years or more. So, you know, it's an impressive stat, that. Although he has had 3 years off, he hasn't coached anywhere since his Newcastle experience ended.
In the bad, Wakefield's defensive line, more like a sieve than a rock-solid wall, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I just got the feeling that, certainly for the Magic weekend, it was as if they'd picked the first 17 Wakefield fans that came through the door and handed them shirts and said, go out and see if you can do us a job.
I think I got asked to play in that one.
Did you?
Yeah.
And you was even wearing a witness shirt at the time. I wouldn't even care. You know, if you want to make yourself sound good, Adrian.
112 points in two games. Wow. See? That's my stat of this podcast.
That's
done
your
dusted.
Stat, don't. Yeah, put your feet up now.
Tell you
relax.
What, Brian Smith has got his work cut out. He's going to turn that round.
Yeah, very difficult. I think that they're not that bad coming forward, but defensively, they're all over the shop at the moment, aren't they? And it will take a lot of work, I feel, to close those defensive gaps, which at the moment look like you could drive double-decker buses through.
Now, surprisingly, some people will be thinking this is a surprise, that we've got Wigan Rugby League's plan to expand the club name and the game into London. We've got it in the bad, but that could be in the good if you're a Wigan fan.
I think it's good for Wigan.
It's good for the game, but it's bad for the Broncos and the Scholars and the Hemel Stags, I feel.
Well, exactly. And I mean, these clubs are now starting to develop a little bit more organically, aren't they, than they have done in the past. So we're always being told about how much Rugby League is taking off from a junior point of view in London. And maybe we're going to hoping to pick up a few good young talent to go back up and supplement what they get from Wigan St Pat's. But I don't know, I just get the feeling that now they're finally starting to produce their own players. I mean, I was at the Hive at the weekend to see London Broncos take on Lee, and there was a good five or six players in that squad that have actually come through the Broncos junior setup, and I feel that it's interfering, almost stepping on their toes, and I would wish that now we have now got this conveyor belt of talent coming through, that it's not suddenly ended by a Northern powerhouse suddenly dropping in.
Oh, you sound like George Osborne when you said that.
Don't go saying that.
You did. Northern powerhouse.
I will back off.
Well, it's up to London clubs to say to Wigan, get off our patch.
Get off our land.
Exactly. Yeah, I can see what you mean, but I think Wigan are just doing it to show off of their office address. Buckingham Palace Road, of all places. Very upmarket. Bit different from Billings High Street.
Just a little bit, yeah. But maybe they asked their mate George Osborne and he set them up there, you know. But who's to say that the Royals aren't Rugby League fans? I mean,
Wales round, he likes his rugger.
I'm sure he does, yeah. And I bet Harry's one of those guys that could play on the wing. I bet you could teach him everything that you know.
Oh, yes. In 2 minutes.
Now, we always have an ugly as well, don't we?
And unfortunately, there's always an ugly in rugby league. I'm not saying Paul Wood's an ugly, but he's 5-match ban for gouging is. Sorry, Woody.
Yeah, it was a very a bad challenge, to be honest. And I couldn't believe he had the gall to try and get himself out of it as well by appealing it. Because he had three cameras all put on him. At the time when he was coming up with the incident. And to be fair, he's one of those guys. He's a friend of our show, isn't he? But Woody, you did wrong on that occasion, pal.
Yeah, thankfully his appeal got through out and he's going to kick his heels in the stands for the next 5 matches.
Yeah, the next one that I've got down here, Championship 1 Rugby League crowds.
No one's watching that. That's a worry for me because the NFL set this league up as a an expansion league as such to try and spread the gospel out of the Northern Heartland, am I right by saying that? It's a good idea, some great interesting clubs down there with Oxford and Gloucestershire, but unfortunately the fans just not interested down there and wanting to watch it.
So it would seem, I mean, at the moment we're looking at the results and the attendances from games which took place weekend in 31st of May. At Hemel, there was 154 people there. At Crusaders, there was 432. Coventry had a bumper crowd. They had about 1,500 there. So well played to them in getting a good crowd against Barrow. Keighley had 931. Oxford, 252. South Wales, 172. OK, there was a great attendance in Newcastle, but that was swelled by the interest garnered from the Magic weekend, wasn't it? And all before. And then we look at the last weekend of action, and it was some pitiful crowds in Furness. I mean, just looking around here, we had Barrow with less than 1,200, London Scholars less than 200, although quite why them and the Broncos are playing on the same day is beyond me. Oldham 671, Oxford 286, Swinton 455, York 386, and Gloucestershire 153. I think that's points sold and encased there, Adrian.
Yeah, they've got a problem, haven't they? They need to somehow raise the crowd numbers to try, because obviously with lower crowds, they won't get the finances to improve their squads, will they? I mean, the Crusaders in Wrexham started off with some great crowds last year, but I've noticed their attendances have dropped by half as well.
I notice at the moment as well, though, they aren't playing at the racecourse, are they? So maybe that's having an influence on their attendances, but even so, that's got to be a little bit of a worry if you're in the management structure of that particular club, as it would be if you're only dragging in 150 plus people. What do we do though? Before, I was telling you, weren't I, about the thing that I've got going with the Lee Centurions, where we do online commentary of the game, and we had 800 people listening to us. Now, I know maths was never my strong suit, but that's higher than four of the Gakes last week at Championship One level. Something has to be done.
Our listening numbers are higher than half of them figures.
And that just
banging our drum, but
that just shows people are desperate for rugby league.
You must be desperate to listen to me.
Must be.
Let's move away from talking the good and bad and ugly and talk about the action, shall we? The one round of Super League took place in Newcastle, the home of Newcastle United. It kicked off on the Saturday. A big win for Widnes Vikings against Salford Red Devils, 38-16. Kevin Brown got a hat-trick for the Vikings on that day, and he capped off a good week or two for himself personally. Even though he keeps saying his teammates helped him along the way, but he got named Player of the Month for May in Super League, and he's also bagged himself a new contract at the Vikings as well, so not a bad week to reward yourself with, is
not a bad it? Not a bad couple of weeks, that, is it, really? Yeah. From Kevin Brown, and not bad from a player who's only played in approximately, 8 or 9 of Widnes' games thus far this season, but he is that sort of guy that will lift Widnes from being the average to the excellent. I think he's definitely international class. And coaching staff of England, look out, because Kevin Brown's coming into that squad. He would do for me anyway.
Yeah, the big Humberside derby between Hull FC and Hull Kingston Rovers. Or is it the East Yorkshire derby? Not got the same.
Call it Humberside.
Yeah,
I'm sure we'll upset a few people, yeah. But you know, they're both by the side of the Humber.
Big win for Hull FC. Hull FC being the informed team and taking the pressure off Lee Radford, but all of a sudden Chris Chester's the man who's under pressure.
Yeah, it's a bit of an oddball one, really, isn't it? I was really impressed with Hull. I really enjoyed this game. For me, this was the best one of the weekend. Hull gave a very complete performance, in all honesty, and were much better than Hull Kingston Rovers throughout the game, I felt. Talanoa grabbed a hat-trick in that one. Kurt Yeaman crossed for a couple of tries. Mark Sneed, good to have him back in kicking form. And Jordan Rankin had a really good influence on the game as well. For Hull Kingston Rovers, well, their defence was a little bit brittle at times, and I'm sure that Chris Chester will be hoping for better. But I think in that one, Hull had a lot more to prove, didn't they? Because the two sides met back at Easter, and Hull Kingston Rovers, despite only having about 30% of the ball, somehow managed to trump Hull by 20 points to 6. So they've gone from being really toothless in attack to being a very efficient unit whatsoever in the last few weeks.
In the final game between Leeds and Wigan, Leeds were 12-0 up at one stage, and we were cruising, weren't they? But all of a sudden, Wigan rose to the challenge and were too good for Leeds on the night.
Yeah, you're right. It was 12-0 and they were looking good with Leeds. Adam Cuthbertson going over for a try. Zach Hardacre was in some sublime form, to be honest. But then, I don't know what happened. Suddenly, Wigan dragged a try back at 12-4, scored two tries before the break. One was a real individual effort from George Williams, who is making me eat my words, because I said that Wigan would struggle without a recognised number six, and yet that young man has really stepped up to the plate over recent weeks and he's starting to tick and make things happen for the Wigan Warriors. But for me, the best performance on the day for Wigan was Matt Bowen. He's hardly been in the team this season, came back, two tries, over 200 metres ran, and, you know, they were very deserving of a 27-12 win in the end for Wigan.
All right, that's the day one done and dusted on the field. Let's get some winners' reaction in the enclosures with the winning coaches.
I think it's just credit to the players and how hard they work. Like I said, they don't look out of place. I mean, you still think we've got Eamon O'Carroll, Danny Tickle, Hep Cahill, Paddy Flynn sat on the sidelines waiting to come back in the side. It's... credit to those lads that are in there working hard. Like I say, Matt Whitley has been outstanding. He's made it, my job really tough, which is what I want from a young kid. It's going to be really hard. I think we're in the positive as well at the moment. I think that's something we've strived for over 3 years, to get ourselves in that, on that positive side, points difference. And sides that finish high in the table, usually in the top eight or maybe in the top six, usually have positive points. And that's something that we've really, really worked hard to get, and it's a great credit today that we tried to get it last week, but just couldn't put the right game together. But today we've got a good bit of points difference. It puts us in the positives.
Any more questions, folks? Dennis, were you used to seeing black and white stripes in the Gallagher end? Yours?
We were the best supporters last Magic at the Etihad. I think it was commented on how vociferous they were, and how fantastic, and how they stayed, and they made the weekend something really special. I think what we've seen today in the first game is that, like, they've done the same again. They've turned up, they've embraced the shirt, they've embraced the concept of where it is, and wanted to buy into that. I think the people in Newcastle have done the same, and it's been, it was fantastic for all our players to be involved in that, and the atmosphere in such an outstanding stadium.
That was a dominant performance, and you know, playing against quality opposition, I think to come away with the result and the manner in that which we got the result was really, really pleasing. It was really stinging from the last time, obviously, we played them. And, you know, physically, I thought it was really, really dominant. And two starting front rows in particular was fantastic for us. So, you know, hopefully they can continue in that form. And, you know, with everybody back now, or almost everybody back now, was, you know, starting to look like a side. You know, we're playing a little bit more as well. I think, you know, I don't know how or why it happened, but obviously with a couple of injuries and players missing, we sort of went into our shell a little bit. And, you know, we'd still managed to sneak a couple of results, but the manner of the results probably wasn't great. You know, but like I say, now we've got, you know, almost our strongest side on the field. We're looking, you know, a far better side. We looked a threat, you know, shifting the ball, and we looked a threat with our big fellas carrying the ball. So that's a real plus for, you know, for us. And, you know, our philosophy is, you know, putting our halves and players in position that we can, you know, pull the trigger whenever we want. And you know, we pull the trigger often. We had a little bit of joy earlier on with it, and, you know, player smarts, I suppose, and Sneedy, you know, putting his hand up and just getting his hands on the ball a little bit more. And obviously, when you've got, you know, Mark and Fatoli on your outside, that helps. What I thought we was really, really pleasing for me was we you know, when we had opportunities, we took them, and that was probably the difference between this week and last week against St Helens.
I think people saw the real Wigan today, and credit to Leeds, they're an outstanding team. You know, with the skills they showed today was unbelievable, and when our backs were against the wall, we just seemed to defend and show a lot of desire and courage in defending against a fantastic team. It was a big day for us today. Mickey Mack's 200th. They love Mickey Mack. He's put his body on the line for so many years for us, and it meant a lot to our players to do it for him. On the back of that, I thought we bombed a few trials in the first half where we really put them under pressure, and in the second half, you know. So I think in attack, you know, we deserved the win today. I thought we were the better team. Newcastle is it's a great stadium. It's the first time I've been here. And to have 40,000 people on in the stadium and watching my young kids, you know, obviously we've got six first teamers out, we're going to get better and improve. But to watch our young kids, you know, do that to a great team, 40,000 people there, giving our fans something to cheer about after last week, it's to me, it's an outstanding venue. If we'd have lost them, I'd have thought a bit different, but I've been really impressed.
There's the winning coaches, all three of them ecstatic to have got through those matches and won.
Yeah, again, I thought that Lee Radford sounded the more laid back of the lot, to be fair, didn't he? And even he spoke for quite a while. So, yeah, fair play to all those coaches. Even Dave Betts sounded like he had a lump in his throat.
Moving on to day two, we had the draw between Catalans and Huddersfield Giants, 22 apiece. Warrington and St Anne's, everyone expected that one to be the best game of the weekend. It never happened for me, that one. And we had a big win for Castleford against Wakefield Wildcats.
Yeah, if I can just summarise that first game, Catalans against Huddersfield, not the best game in the world, but certainly one of the most exciting finishes to a game that I've seen for a couple of seasons in fairness. Jermaine McGilvery going over right near the end and Danny Brough goaling from a difficult angle to claim a share of the points. The second game, yeah, it was a bit of an average local derby for me, this one. St Helens looked a little bit devoid of ideas in the first half. Warrington got out to a 16-8 advantage. In the second half, it was like Warrington forgot the sat-nav, didn't they? And St Helens came back, tough effort from them, ended up winning 20 points to 16. And finally, with Castleford Tigers, well, Denny Solomona was perhaps the man of the weekend, wasn't he, with his four tries?
Yeah, four well-taken efforts and really putting more pressure and making it more of a woeful season for Wakefield.
Yeah, did you also notice Ashley Gibson also got in for a hat-trick as well? His efforts were somehow overshadowed, weren't they, by the four-try showing of Denny Solomona. But yeah, Cass played some great stuff on the day. Luke Gale also heavily involved with 8 goals and a try too.
Well done to those guys. Let's hear from the winning coaches from day two of the Magic Weekend.
Just asked a question in the change room. That's good, isn't it? Do you feel that's a point won or a point get lost? And it's a point lost. I think second half for us were absolutely pathetic. I thought we were awful. Catalan are fair saying that, and their important people started playing. But some our middle in that second half were, well, it was like tissue paper, they just ran through us at will. Not good enough. 16-0 up. That's just a bit of game management from us. It's just win your rucks, knock your sets out, kick long, chase hard, and do the things that we did in the first half and put the young kid at the back under pressure, which is what we did. Why was that not a try, by the way, Joe? On the, did you say a shoulder charge? We failed to win the ruck, and they got rolling on us, and some of the stuff we come up with were pathetic. Real, real poor. But, like I said, I've just absolutely sprayed them in there. But then I said, I've got to give you credit, because you found a way to come back into it, and there's a man to kick a goal off a sideline, it's Bruffy, isn't it? Which, if you look at it, it's overall, I'm assuming Catalans will be, it's like, a little bit like the Leeds game the other week, isn't it? It's, you get, we've got the opposite way around, where you get in a position to actually kill the game off 16-0, and then we end up having to scrap like all hell to get ourselves a draw in the end.
The boys had a dig. We were losing 10-0, 16-0, and we're starting to have some momentum, and we stay clinical, calm, clinical, and we come back into the game. So pretty proud of the boys tonight, the way they come back against a very good Huddersfield side.
You sort of live by the sword and die by the sword, don't you? So if that's how you defend certain players and it doesn't come off, then you've got to give the opposition a pat on the back and say, well done, you've executed it well enough to score. But you know, I thought we was good. I thought the second half was outstanding. It was definitely a game of two halves. It definitely was. We started with lots of vigour and want and will. And then after 10 minutes or 12 minutes, we just dropped away and we did our best to lose the game. We couldn't complete a set. I think we got down to good ball about 3 or 4 times and we completed a set once and Louis McCarthy scored. There's a bit of a moral in that tale for the team, but we had a good chat at half-time and they came out fighting. You know, they were very spirited and, you know, the resilience to defend the game is, you just can't fault it. That's 2 weeks in a row we've backed our defence and to sort of seal the victory for us, and we've come up trumps. And I keep saying to the players, you can't fabricate stuff like that. You can't fabricate togetherness. You can't make it up. And it's something that happens over a period of time, and you can't give them will and want. You know, that's what they've got out of themselves, and the fight to defend their own line, you know, it was stellar. They should be proud of what they did.
Yeah, obviously really pleased with the with the final result. I thought, yeah, we started the game outstandingly well, and our second half was excellent after a scratchy start, but I thought, you know, for large parts of the game we were well on top, and you know, there's some real pleasing elements to our performance. He's got a fair bit of ability, Denny, and he did really well today. Obviously I thought both our wingers finished outstandingly. They both got off the floor and scored tries that are difficult to score, so they were both good. But Denny's got a bit of spark about him, and he did really, really good game today. We set ourselves some targets, and if we achieve them, then we'll be there and thereabouts. But we just need to keep improving. Obviously, we'll get some players back from injury as well, which will really help us. But I thought there were some players there today that probably haven't played to the potential, and I was really pleasing today that they stood up. I thought people like Ryan Boyle, Mike McMeekin, and Junior Moores, who just had really good games, guys who've there's been a little bit of injuries and they haven't quite hit the best form. I thought those were three guys today who were really good.
I always love listening to Daryl Powell, mate. I think he's a great guy and he's a great coach as well.
He is, yes. Continues to do a very good job. Interesting to note that over recent days he's actually said that he doesn't foresee making many changes to his squad. Unfortunately, a lot of the good work that was done by his squad last season has been undone a little bit this year, hasn't it, with regards to lots of people going out of the exit gates and new players coming in. And it's taken a while for them to finally find the feet, and I think they're starting to do that now.
Good to see, Paul Anderson and Lauren Fresnay both admitting it was a point loss rather than a point gain.
Well, I thought it was good to see. Yeah, I think I'm going to stick with you on what you originally said, though, because they were both honest, weren't they? Very, very honest assessment from both of those coaches. I like listening to Paul Anderson in fairness, because I reckon, A, he's a good coach, and B, well, he just says it as it is, doesn't he? He doesn't hold or pull any punches. He just sort of comes out with it. And yes, although it was disappointing as a game, I think the fans were happy.
The round after the Magic weekend was being billed as the battle for the top eight heating up, wasn't it? And we saw Widnes and Hull going head-to-head and Hull FC continuing their good form.
Yeah, you've already mentioned him once in this show, but Tom Lynham crossing for a hat-trick, that was certainly the highlight as far as Hull were concerned. Widnes started this game incredibly well, went 12-0 in front after about 15 minutes, everything sticking, everything looking good, and then suddenly Hull hit back, Widnes had no answer.
Warrington seen off the challenge eventually of Catalan driving to make it a miserable week for the men from the Catalan from the south of France. Hulkinson Rovers continue their losing form with a defeat at the hands of Castleford, 30 points to 22. St Helens proved to be too strong for the Red Devils, winning 32-12. Leeds Rhinos got back to winning ways to thrash Wakefield 58-26. And Wigan continued to improve with a hard-fought win away to Huddersfield.
Did you hear that one about the Wigan game at Huddersfield? There was a power cut there at Huddersfield, so it ended up with Wigan getting changed in the canteen. I wonder if anybody found any pies. It's got to be like those vans you see, isn't it? No pies are locked in this vehicle overnight.
Despite Danny Brough probably getting the try of the weekend with a spectacular length for the field effort, it was all in vain for the Giants.
Yeah, and again, it's just highlighting that Wigan are coming too now, aren't they? They had Liam Farrell back, he grabbed a couple of tries. Josh Charnley was also involved too. But the game that we were at was that game between Widnes and Hull, and we caught up with Lee Radford after it.
Seen very little possession and very little territory, so to come in at half-time leading I thought was a credit to the group that was on the field. To come down the other end and sort of sucker punch them like that was great, and you know, hopefully the form can continue and the wins can continue. We've got a great group and, you know, some real outstanding performers within that. So, like I said, we've just got to keep them blocks on the field and keep building momentum in what we're doing. You know, all the build-up, I suppose, was about Widnes, and you know, rightly so, they've been in some, you know, really good form, and Kevin Brown in particular has been playing outstanding. So to control him like we did and defend around him like we did with the energy that we did was what we needed to do. Credit to him that did that.
So Lee Radford there, obviously another very happy sounding coach.
He will be one. I mean, they're going great guns. I mean, you think in the last 8 games or so, they've won at least 6 of them.
Yeah, they really have turned around their fortunes, haven't they? And now they can start looking higher up the table as opposed to over the shoulder at the bottom four.
We've had plenty of coaches' reaction, by the way. Let's have some player reaction. We caught up with a great pair of hookers from the Magic Weekend.
Can you say that?
And that's James Roby and Danny Houghton.
I'd sooner call it a pair of nines, Adrian.
Okay, go with that. Danny Houghton, you played in many derbies. How special was that one today to get the victory?
Every single one that you win is special, but to do it on a special occasion like the Magic Weekend, where we ain't had really great success at the Magic Weekend, it was it was very pleasing. And in the old scheme of the season, it was a massive win for us.
Terrific game out there, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was really enjoyable to play in. It was a bit tit for tat at first, and then we scored a few points, and I got that cushion. But they're a good team, and they came back at us, and it took a few good tries to see them off.
So you had to hold your nerve, but you showed the character to finish them off, like you said.
Yeah, that was right. Yeah, we knew that was gonna be in an 80-minute game, and they always do that in the derby. They play with energy, and they've got some class players, and we showed today that we are an 80-minute team, and we can play. But
what was the key to success today?
I reckon our energy and our physicality in the middle, got us a good foothold in the game, and we've got some class, in Leon and and some of the edge men that can score some points for us.
So your fine effort and a hat trick from Talalona.
Yeah, he's a great player for us, and he does the hard graft as well for us and gets us on the front foot, and pleased for him to score a few tries today.
Just concentrating on the engine room, pretty physical out there in the middle, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very physical. They've got some big boys them, and same with us, and it was good to be a part of, good to be involved in a good physical battle.
You said you enjoyed the match. How did you feel you went personally?
Well, I don't really know. I'll have to watch it back. But playing it felt good. Felt like I was busy, and that's all I can do.
In terms of the season, how big of a win is that for you guys?
Massive. Yeah, we talked about it all week about we've played them by 2 points now, and we're looking upwards and onwards now. And
James Roby, it's always a tough game against Warrington, and today was no different.
No, it was a very tough game, to be honest. And obviously the first half we didn't play as well as we'd like, but I'm sure probably Warrington could say the same thing. And we come in, we was behind at half time. We spoke about we needed a bit of reaction, and I think we put a great defensive display in the second half, and it wasn't the prettiest game to watch, but I think our defence got us there in the end.
From the Saints' point of view, definitely a game of two halves.
Yeah, like you say, it was a game of two halves in terms of first half going in behind, second half, I don't think they scored a point, so to keep a team like Warrington to nil in any half, you've achieved something. So it's just positive that we kind of took on board what we spoke about at half time, went out there and did it, and ultimately that won us the game.
That's got to be a bonus, the fact you did keep them scoreless in that second half.
Yeah, well, obviously it's a massive bonus. Like I say, Warrington are a quality team, and everybody knows what they're capable of, and that obviously reflects in they're always there thereabouts at the end of the year. So it's a big game. We knew it was going to be a big game, and we're lucky enough to come away with the win. I suppose it's hard work pays off, and we've got a big block of games coming up now, and we need to keep our heads down, keep concentrating and working hard for each other, and hopefully the more wins we can keep picking up, the better we can sit on the table.
You mentioned it was a big game. How big of a tackle was that by Tommy Makinson?
Yeah, well, Tommy did a great tackle there at the end. Anyway, he come in and jammed the winger, if you like, and the ball spilled out, didn't it, I think. So yeah, they're big players, and obviously that's things we work on in training. We watch video of opposition teams and stuff, and Tommy's doing his job there and doing it very well, to be honest. And Tommy's as well as all the other players, and I think Adam Swift did well on the other wing as well on Chris Bridge, where they're almost try saving tackles, if you like, because if the outside backs are warranted, if they get the ball in clear space, then it takes some catching. So yeah, it's a great effort by them and by all involved.
You said they took a bit of a knock in the first half, but you're still able to carry on, tough as nails, I've got to say.
No, I think any player would have done the same. I think obviously, yeah, he's got a little bit of a knock early doors, and with the concussion rules now, you have to obviously come off, get assessed by the doctor, So obviously I got assessed, passed all the tests that I needed to pass, and then waited till the 15 minutes was up before I could come back on. And luckily enough, like I say, I was able to come back on, and I feel fine now. So touch wood, it wasn't nothing too serious. But I'm made up with the result.
Two quality players who still have an influence on the games that they're involved in.
Well, you often hear coaches talk about energy, don't you, and dynamics. You often hear them talk about that type of stuff.
You're sounding like you're ordering the drink in Newcastle, right?
I've slipped back into my yard here.
Yeah.
Yes, but both of those players still very, very important to the clubs. Danny Houghton, for me, was the key man, and for me, the man of that magic weekend. But James Robey, geez, that man is Superman. He gets knocked out virtually, goes off the field for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, gets assessed, goes back on, wins the game for St. Helens. You can't buy that type of effort, can you?
Before we continue in talking rugby league, let's hear from the guys on Rugby League Street who make a welcome return to the final, who he says are talking about
rules and regulations.
Let's hear from them.
Hello, welcome to this week's Rugby League Street. I'm Robert Lee and I'm joined again by Kieran Makin, Chris Stott and Drew Derbyshire. And of course, we have a special guest this week of Scott Jones. And we're going to be looking at things that we need either clarification of or rule changes in rugby league. And the first one is, well, Kieran brought it up, and it's video refs. Do you want to start us off, Kieran?
Well, my official idea was about forward passes, but we've decided there's things more important than forward passes in rugby league. And one of them is the try, no try, which, Chris, you brought up.
It
came to fruition for me in the league game against Wakefield, where they get that try chopped off because basically Ben Thaler gives a try on field, which for me suggests that there has to be absolutely conclusive evidence to overrule the try. And then when you see it, I think it's Ryan Briley is half an inch tops offside.
It's not
then,
a lot.
And then there's an argument that is then run onside.
Oh, we'll come on to that in a minute.
We'll come on to later. And just things like that where, they change the rule to make it so that the referees have more of a say, and then they get overruled because, that looks ever so slightly suspicious. It's just annoying that if that wasn't a video referee game, it would have been given.
Almost
so,
like they've gone back on the word.
And it's like, I think for me, this has been said by players as well as just us watchers of the game, that you've got to, if you have video referees in the sport, you've got to have it at all the games or none of them. You can't just have it on TV games. Have it at every game. Otherwise, what's the point having it? Because it's basically making one game a week more important than the other by having a video referee.
It's a very good point. So video refing is either at every game or at no game.
Yeah,
that's a very good point that we think. And now you mentioned Ryan Briley on there, we're going to quickly go on about the onside offside rule, and this is the one I brought up because if you watch the game again, the Wakefield match, and this is the example I've got, Martin Ridyard kicks through, and Ryan Briley is offside initially, but then if you watch in the background, Andrew Dixon runs as fast as he can because he's in an onside position, and everybody ends up behind Andrew Dixon. Now in rugby union, the ruling is if a player from the onside position runs past everybody in the offside position, he's run everybody onside. Whether that's the rule in rugby league, we don't know. We need clarification on it. I don't know if anybody else has got anything to add to that.
I'm pretty sure somebody in the commentary suggested something similar to that. And, it makes you think, if it's in rugby union, it's one of them that should apply to both.
And the other one that we're going to have an input on and think that needs clarifying is scrums and when the ball's in and out, or should they just change scrums in total? Anybody got any suggestions?
I think they should go back to where there used to be scrums. I think you should be able to push straight away from the mark because it makes the game more entertaining. Because I saw Martin O'Fire tweet about it a few months back. What's the point in just having a standstill scrum? You may as well just take a tap there because there's literally no point in it at all.
For me, a scrum in rugby league is just a bit of a cuddle for forwards.
Well, you've seen Jamie Peacock talking to Craig Hube, and they're just having a laugh. And in rugby union, you see him in the scrums. You're talking, how many people in a scrum in rugby union?
16 players in a scrum in rugby union.
Exactly.
and they all want to rip each other's head off.
They're probably calling each other's mothers in the scrum, and I'm not going to say any inappropriate words, but like personally, I like to see an aggressive scrum, not to the similarity of rugby union, but
a bit of pushing.
I'm going to mention it now. The St. Helens last Nose of the Road Good Friday, where Wigan won. Thank you very much, St. Helens. Wigan actually pushed in the scrum, and it was a St. Helens head and feed, and O'Loughlin's broke away with the ball, and St. Helens are too busy mourning to the referee, but the referee's confusing himself because he doesn't know.
Yeah.
There's no ruling against to give a penalty. So he needs clarification of whether you can still push in scrum, and eventually Wigan have gone on with the advantage from winning that ball from that scrum, and they've scored.
Quickly before I come up with my point on scrums, the differential penalties. Anybody actually have a clue what the differential penalty's for? I'm looking to my
left. I think Scott Jones has an
Scott
idea
might know.
The differential penalties.
Right, I've heard it before. Right? A differential penalty is given is when the ball's in the scrum, and where Wigan is one team, and a couple of other teams in Super League have started to con onto this rule and get, when they're under pressure on their own 20 or their own 10, Luke, when teams, when the ball's still in the back of the scrum and the defensive team's moved up, they're then classed as sort of offside. But because if the ball's in the scrum, they give a penalty. That's what's called a differential penalty. They've started cropping up quite a lot recently. But it's not just that with the scrums, is that scrums just in general, like I was at the Wigan Hull KR match in the Challenge Cup, and the amount of scrums where the ball was put in and it was out and the referee said no, called them back, and they had to do it all over again. I mean, let's just face it, that you don't really see many tries these days come straight from a scrum. People just tend to take one in and then they go from that play the ball. But you don't even see like all the forwards going in the scrum. You see wingers going in the second row just to make up the numbers, and then the ball's out.
It used to be the props. It used to be your pack. Didn't
your whole pack used to go. But you see like wingers and centres just filling in.
Fullback going in,
Maybe that should be a rule that they look at in rugby league, that all the forwards have to go in their positions and, you know, stick to that, and you're not allowed to just throw. You can throw anybody you want in the scrum to stop the clock, but then, you know, you can set your scrum then with your forwards in it. But my one, quickly before we wrap up, is from a scrum, and it again was from the Wigan Hull KR match, was the ball was still in the back of the scrum. It was still at the loose forward's feet. The ball hadn't left the scrum. And Richard Silverwood said, it's out. I've shouted that it's out. It's out. Well, everybody can see that the ball's still in the scrum. So that allowed Hull KR to break the scrum and then move up as a line. And that just put Wigan under pressure on their own line.
Yeah.
What you can do about that is why we're here to discuss it, but we've not got time. But we'll look forward to the next Rugby League Street. So thank you to our guests, and thank you to Scott for sitting in on this one. If you've got any suggestions of what you'd like to discuss, you can hit us up on Twitter. Kieran's at Keymax Sports. Christopher Stott is ChrisStott1996. I'm at RobLee559, and Drew Derbyshire is at Derby Sports. And we'll see you next time.
Some interesting points that the guys brought up there. Don't know whether the RFL want to implement any of them, though. Right, just moving away from the Magic Weekend. The same weekend of the Magic Weekend in the Championship, we saw Dewsbury defeat Doncaster, who's still yet to win the game. They've lost to Dewsbury 14-6. Featherstone thrashed back the Bulldogs 44-16. London Broncos lost out to Bradford Bulls 36-18. Whitehaven weren't good enough on the day for Lee, who continued their winning streak with a 46-16 victory. And Workington lost heavily to Halifax as well, 32-6. And on the Friday, we saw Sheffield Eagles thrash Huntsville at 54-10.
Yeah, word about Sheffield Eagles in this one. They were only leading 10 points to 6 at half-time against Huntsville. Now, I've already said numbers isn't really what I tend to go off, but to put 44 points on in the second half. Menzie Yeary with 4 tries as well. Great effort from him. He was my man of the week in the Championship on that.
The round just gone. What round have you up to? I can't remember. You're the Championship guru.
I've not looked it up.
15.
This was round 16.
15 for Liam Bradford, 16 for everybody
this
else.
This was round 16.
And we've lost our page again. Here we go. Bradford Bulls defeated Doncaster 72-6. Are Donny ever going to win a game this year? Is it going to be another bloody Sunday for Doncaster?
Well, I certainly hope that they will do. And they've brought Gary Thornton on board now as their coach. That was his first game in charge. I'm sure that just gave him a glimpse of the enormity of his task there. But
our listeners, by the way, over the age of 40, will know exactly what I'm on about.
Oh, it was that infamous documentary, wasn't it, back in the 70s, which showed Doncaster at the very worst. But yes, as I said, they've got a new coach in place there in Gary Thornton. He's been around the Championship for a few years. He was coach at York last season, remember? Won all the awards, and then they sacked him the day after the end of the season. It was just a really odd sort of thing to happen. You know, and he's gone in there at Doncaster. Big, big challenge ahead of him. But I'm confident, to be honest, that Doncaster can overcome that and probably mount a challenge in the second half of the season.
Everyone's been talking about Lee, by the way, putting wins back to back this season, but Bradford just going about the business rather quietly, just letting Lee hog all the spotlight.
Yeah, they've not really gone about it that quietly, though, have they? James Laws has been talking all about it. I just get the feeling that, you know, Bradford are coming to somewhat. It's certainly setting up nicely, isn't it, for the clash which will take place next month between Bradford and Lee. Talking of Lee, they travelled, they had a 27-match winning run.
Big whoops to the Broncos!
Which ground to a halt, yes, it was all done and dusted, really, in the first 33 minutes of the game. London Broncos had a great start, scoring tries after 10, 17 and 23 minutes to go 16-0 up. Lee hold a try back on the first proper attack in the Broncos' half, but then London went up the other end, scored 22 points to 4, although Lee scored a couple of tries before half-time to make it 22-16 at the break. In the second half, Jamie Thackeray rolled back the years with a charge-down try where he went in from 40 yards, Adrian.
Good pace.
Great pace. Naguama kicked 4 goals. Minchella, the youngster from Leeds on loan, kicked a drop goal. And the Lee run was ended, 29 points to 20.
Notice Andrew Henderson must have got the playing bug back after that summer bash, because he put his name in the hat, first of all, to be out there to take on the Centurions. He's got the playing bug back, hasn't he?
Played 65 minutes as well. Very, very good performance from Andrew Henderson. He gave Mickey Higham the slip a couple of times, to be fair. So, you know, very good player. Very well done to London Broncos. They're probably one of the first clubs in a number of weeks that hasn't come to try and bash Lee up, and they've just decided to play rugby. London showing that they didn't need to bring out a nasty streak to beat them.
Other results in round 15, or round 16, depending on who your team was. Dewsbury Browns held on for a hard-fought draw against Workington, 20 points each. And Whitehaven defeated Huntsford 28-12.
Yeah, I mean, great result for Whitehaven. They have been threatening recently. I was impressed with their second-half performance against Lee. There was one other game which took place in the Championship. That was played on the Saturday, and that saw Featherstone beaten by Halifax 44 points to 20. That was after Halifax established a 26-4 half-time lead. Hat-tricks there for Tommy Saxton and Gareth Potts. So the two wingers definitely flying.
Look like Featherstone were improving, but they've suddenly had the wins clipped, haven't they?
They have, yeah. They seem a bit of a funny side at the moment, where it's almost like they take a step forward and two steps back within the space of a fortnight. I mean, the first 10 minutes against Lee and the Blackpool Bash, they were very good. They were very good the previous week against Batley, where they led 34-0 at half-time. They were fair in the second half of this game, but in the whole scheme of things, Halifax far too strong.
League One's reached the round 9 stage of the season. It's hotting up lovely in League One, isn't it? Barrow had a big game against Keithley, but the Cougars held on for a 24-22 win. London Scholars were flashed by Coventry, who suddenly found in defeat in League One, aren't they? Defeating the Scholars 46-20. Crusaders came up with a massive win against Oldham to win 38-28. Well done to Anthony Murray's men. South Wales lost out to Oxford 38-30. And Swinton defeated Newcastle Thunder 44-32.
Interesting set of results, to be honest. But yeah, I'm with you. Well played to Coventry. They did really well against the London Scholars side. One result that we didn't mention, though, was York just holding off Rochdale Hornets 34 points to 20.
Where are they playing their games now? Timbuktu?
Well, York have played the last two games at Featherstone, hence why I think they've had the crowds go down to less than 400 and less than 300 respectively.
Need to sort out their off-field problems very quickly.
Definitely. I'm certainly full of agreement with you there. Unfortunately for South Wales, I can't see them winning a game at this moment in time. There was one other game that we didn't mention, which was Gloucestershire All Goals.
And the other game
against
Hemel.
No, that's it. That's it. Gloucestershire All Goals against Hemel Stags. Hemel Stags doing the business, 34-30.
Some really high scoring. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah. So certainly, if you want to catch some high scoring rugby league, League One's the place to be.
Who do you think's going to come out of there into the Championship?
I'm between Barrow and Keighley at the moment. I'd like to think
North Wales could force a way in.
North Wales are still there or thereabouts. In fact, if you do have a look at the league table, there is nothing to choose between half the league, in fairness. You know, Barrow are sitting down in eighth position. So what do I know? They've won 5, lost 4. The team at the top is Keighley. They've won 7 of their 8 games. Rochdale, Oldham and Newcastle all took in just behind them.
Crusaders currently in 5th, with South Wales doing a Doncaster along with London Scores and Hemel Stags, who have yet to win a game.
And Swinton as well also.
What am I on about? London there. Scores and Hemel have won games. It's South Wales who haven't won a game.
They have. Your eyes are letting you down, mate. South Wales lost all 9 encounters thus far. London Scores 1 win. Hemel with 3 wins, Coventry with 3, Gloucestershire All Golds with 3, Oxford with 4. There's a bit of a north-south divide happening there, though, isn't there?
There is.
So you've got the
Northern
teams.
Powerhouses, sound like. But politicians, again, they're at the top of the table, whereas the Southern Softies are at the bottom.
Yeah, less of the Softies, though. Less of the Softies, though. They're playing a man's game.
Speaking about the Championships, by the way, it's been announced that the Halton Stadium's going to be the venue for the Championship and Championships Finals Day.
You're quite happy with that, aren't you?
Not it's far only, to walk.
It's only 10 minutes away from your house.
Exactly.
So does that mean I can turn up for a brew before we head off to the Finals Day?
I'll charge you. Pound.
All these things that we do, all these things that I've done down the years, surely you can spare us a brew, mate.
It's good to see the Championship Finals Day return back to Widnes.
Yeah, it's kind of like been off the record for a few years, hasn't it?
And
it is nice for it to come back. It's all going to start with the Challenge Trophy at the start. Then we'll see the promotion clash to get from League One into the Championship and sort out the second promotion spot. And then finally, it's going to be who wins the Shield, which is a new competition this year, isn't it?
It's hot enough nicely as well, not just for the top 8 in Super League, but who's going to be in the middle 8? Who's going to be there threatening from the Championship?
Well, you know, you've got to look at the two professional, fully professional sides, haven't you, in Lee and Don... Lee and Doncaster.
Yeah,
I've got Doncaster on the brain. Lee and Bradford. And, you know, but if you're after somebody to make a little bit of an impact on it, maybe a Sheffield.
Well, it's pretty tight, isn't it? You've got Lee, top, obviously, 11 points with Bradford. Sheffield are 4 points behind. Dewsbury, a further 5 behind Sheffield on 19. And then you've got Halifax with 1 point behind them on 18. But they're level with Featherstone. And the Broncos just tucked in nicely on 16.
So, in other words, for the final spot, because I reckon that Lee, Bradford and Sheffield have probably got enough points on the board now to start thinking of those middle eights. But the fourth spot is definitely the race is on, isn't it? Between Dewsbury, Halifax, Featherstone and London.
Right, we're going to move away from talking about modern day rugby league. It's that time of the show where we talk about our vintage year of rugby league. And what a year it was, 1975-76.
Oh.
The year the Snake was released by Al Wilson.
The Snake from Al Wilson.
Now, the proper musical experts out there will quite rightly know it was released in 1968. But due to the Northern Soul scene that was happening around the clubs of Wigan and God knows where in the UK, Al Wilson's The Snake was the out from the all hip the snake belts too. Couldn't get help with just why not? It just rhymed.
Try that again. Something about snake belts.
They're all dancing around the clubs in the snake belt.
Oh, yeah. Folks, it has been a long night. But you, what can we tell
listen,
you about?
If you look at the documentary for Wigan Casino, you can see him with the snake belts on. With the Birmingham bags.
I'll go and tell Al Wilson then, shall I? Anyway, back to the rugby
league. Let's start rugby. Let's get serious for a minute, shall we?
Look who was top, Salford.
Wow, Malvern Kuk has a dream about that day happening for them.
But what a top four as well. Featherstone Rovers in second spot, Leeds third, St Helens fourth. No sign of Wigan, they're down in fifth, and Widnes, well, sixth.
Cup Kings were happening for the Vikings there. That was late in the 70s for the Cup Kings, wasn't it? But yeah, great to see Salford win their sixth and final championship.
Impressive start again. That's your second stat of this show.
Getting relegated because we had promotion and relegation back in 1975-76 season. We saw Dewsbury, Keighley, Huddersfield and Swinton depart the Championship to go and get used to life in the old second division for the following season. In the second division, champions were Barrow of all teams.
Barrow, yes.
And they were promoted alongside Rochdale Hornets, Workington Town and Lee.
But look at Halifax, down languishing in 11th spot. They had a dodgy, dodgy season then, didn't they? Only won 7 of the 26 games.
Now, Doncaster are having a bad season this year. They were having a bad season in 75-76, although they did win 2 games.
They won 2 games. Blackpool Borough finished above them, winning 6 of theirs. So yeah. What about the main games in the year? What about the Challenge Cup? Who was playing in that one?
It's St Helens and Widnes. Dad's Army St Helens won it.
You was telling me a little bit about this. Played in a heat wave, wasn't it?
Played in the heat wave. Chopper Smith, the Widnes fan, got on the crossbars at half time.
Well, I wouldn't know anything about that.
You've got to look at the old footage. But an old friend of mine, Peter Glenn, proper West Banker from Widnes.
Okay.
He told me the story that Widnes players were calling Saints Dad's Arm because he had like the Jeff Pimlet. Great player, but passed his best at this final. Tony Crawless, another guy who was passed his best at it during that year. Georgie Nichols is in his veteran stage of his career. Eric Chisnall, Billy Bennion. No, the average age of them must have been like 190. And Peter Grimm is only 19-year-old.
And who were the young whippersnappers in the Widnes side then?
Well, they had the all-stars. You had Reggie Bolden of the world. David Eckersley was young and up and coming. Eric Hughes. Oh, there was a load of them, weren't there? John Foran, Mick Adams. And Reggie Bolden actually turned around because not like the modern day where the referee blows his whistle. In the old Wembley, there used to be a bell go off in the dressing room, and when they came out, the St Helens players, the Widnes players were already outside, and somebody shouted, I think it was Reggie Bolden, shouted, "Oh, you decided to turn up, lads." And don't worry, because the scoreboard used to be a manual scoreboard. Remember the guys in the white jackets putting the numbers on? They turned around and said, "We've already informed the scoreboard men to have an extra number on up there ready for when we put over 100 points on them." How wrong were Widnes on the day?
They were a bit arrogant, weren't they?
Very arrogant. Lost 20 points to 5.
Now, this was also an interesting season because, like so often, rugby league was being innovative. There's that word.
You're always going to drink in Newcastle again.
I sound like I am, aren't I? But it was the very first Premiership Trophy competition. It was played at the end of the season with the top 8 in the league qualifying each other.
I mean, how many times the fans kicked off about it and couldn't get their heads around the system.
But 1v8, 2v7.
Oh, too confusing,
3v6, 4v5.
Listen, that's too confusing compared to what we've got now.
And then we had the state that was played at Station Road. Remember Station Road?
I do remember Station Road, yeah.
18,000 people there at Station Road in Swinton to see St Helens defeat Salford 15-2.
Just looking at teams who were around in 1976, who are not there anymore. I like doing this, by the way, on the old Rugby League vintage year on this final Hooter show. Bramley were in the league, they're no longer with us. New Huntslet was still called New Huntslet. Highton, remember Highton? They're not around anymore. We've already mentioned one, Blackpool Borough.
But Highton finished ahead of Whitehaven, Halifax, Batley and Blackpool, didn't they? And Donny, like we said before.
Exactly. So, yeah, some interesting things happening around that year. And we had, also in this year as well, Papua New Guinea. Let's just switch domestic rugby league to international rugby league. Papua New Guinea played their first ever international against Great Britain of all teams.
I bet Stanley Jean was in the side, wasn't he?
He probably was, not being standing to.
We never know, do we? Nobody's seen his birth certificate.
By the way, Papua New Guinea lost that game, 40-12. Other winners in domestic rugby league, by the way, and the players' number 6 trophy was won by Widnes, who defeated Hull 19-13 in the final. The BBC 2 Floodlit Trophy was won by St Helens, who defeated Dewsbury. We had the County Cup as well. The Lancashire Cup winners were Widnes, who defeated Salford 16-7. And Leeds... Yes, Leeds did win the Yorkshire Cup 15-11. Vintage year it was, but when we talk about rugby league now, we talk about the modern era, don't we?
Do we have to?
Yeah. But we're not going to do that to the next final hooter.
Hey!